Hi, I'm Abby.
And I'm Ashlyn.
And this is the Ice Cream Social. Hello.
Howdy.
How are you?
Oh, man.
That good?
Doing fine. How are you?
You a little tired?
There's something in my eye right now, though.
A sparkle? A glimmer?
It's just you shine too brightly.
A tear, if you don't knock it off. No.
Glad we found a time to sit down and do this.
I know. I should have, read through my story before we did this, because I wrote it, I don't know, last week sometime.
We scheduled five different times to record this episode.
But we're here.
We made it.
We did it.
So much has happened.
I know.
So much time has elapsed.
Listen, I was so tired. I don't know why after that concert.
I don't feel like I recovered until Saturday, which was yesterday.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I felt like I stayed up all night.
The margarita party was the weekend earlier.
Gosh,
and
I know.
So I wasn't okay by the time we went to the Hozier concert. And then, I'm sorry, Hozier.
Whatever it is. Hoosier.
They can't make me
That's
say
not
it
the
like
same
that.
Thing.
It's Hozier, okay?
It's Hozier. Don't come for us.
No, and then I've just been exhausted. But then today, finally, I had some energy, so we cleaned the whole house.
Yeah, I finally felt like myself yesterday, but I still just, relaxed. And then today I woke up guns blazing and did a bunch of chores and cleaning and whatnot.
It's a good feeling when, you actually use your Sunday for something productive, you know?
Actually. And, the past, four Sundays, which is, a record for me, I've gone into the week with, all the dishes done, all the laundry done, the dusting, the vacuuming, all of it done.
All the things done.
And so that's my motivation, because it just feels so nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's, good for your mind and spirit and soul and dancer's heart.
What do they say? A clean room means a
clean mind.
Oh, well, a cluttered room means a cluttered mind. So, right. The opposite of that.
Yeah.
Somebody make it up.
I tell you what, though, I feel like that isn't true for, not every artist is messy, but most artists are messy. And, I know where everything is.
I was going to say, artists and ADHD, because I know where everything is.
Yeah. And then it's,
almost
worse.
Until I really need it.
Yeah.
Or somebody moved it slightly, and I can no longer find it.
If somebody else is involved, it's just bad.
It's just bad. I learned... what is it? It's doom boxing or doom bagging.
What's that?
You just have a bag or a box somewhere in your place that you just throw random stuff in because you don't know what to do with it.
Like the junk drawer?
Yes.
Okay.
But
for your life.
More.
Okay.
But I learned that was a more common thing. And I was wow. Because the bins on our bookshelf, random stuff.
Full of stuff.
Random
stuff.
That's
our dining room table is the collection area, you know?
Man.
I mean, we never use it, so it's just, and it's right when we walk in, it's
easy.
Toss the stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to have a little table when you first walk in to throw stuff down.
Yeah.
We now have two.
Well, we cleaned ours today, so it's a dining room table now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. For how long it lasts.
I'm trying to think of all that's transpired since we last recorded. I got in a car accident.
You got a new car, too.
And got in, yep, but... Not super exciting because
the whole car is come and gone. Time
I had that car for less than a year. Less than a year. Literally the anniversary for it popped up a week ago. I was awesome.
But you upgraded.
I did. Still tragic. That was very trying times. I don't think I've ever been more stressed in my life.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it wasn't my fault.
Yeah. It's the worst when... car stuff happens because it just throws everything off in a way that you did not expect. And it's it's the same with when something is wrong, the plumbing or something in your house that needs to be fixed immediately, because it's just you can't think about anything else because you're worried about that.
Right. And how do you have
planning on being worried about that?
How do you have a good day when you're I don't have a car anymore?
right.
Fine.
Yeah.
But no, I was very lucky all around. And thankfully, Tanner was able to work from home.
Yeah.
So I borrowed his car.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, he worked from home for like 2 weeks, which was great. Very appreciative. And then they gave me a rental car for a week. That rental car was sketchy. It looked nice, but I was pretty confident it wasn't going to turn on sometimes.
I knew a girl like that once. I don't know what that means.
I'm trying to think. How did I describe the car? Sketchy? It looked nice. It looked nice. Now I think we know what that means.
Yeah.
Man. I feel like there was something else. I almost wrote down stuff to talk to you about.
You should have. I would love that.
Me? Hold, carry the conversation?
You don't go to parties with a list of conversation topics?
No. But I do think over... I do have anxiety over, like, what I'm going to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm going to go hang out with somebody, I'm like, what do we even talk about?
Yeah. No, I've literally, like, Googled...
I don't solve that problem, but...
things to talk about before.
Have you really?
I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
That's amazing.
But it's not a bad, like... because a lot of the times they're, like, very odd questions that I wouldn't normally ask, but I want the answers to them, you know?
Do you have a favorite?
What kind of question is that?
Oh,
no, I don't know. Like, if you could go to dinner with anyone, who would anyone
that's such
who's
a
ever
classic.
Been alive?
That's
who would
such
you go
a classic
to dinner
question.
With?
Yeah. I don't know.
Me?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go to dinner. No, I'm just kidding.
There's too many people to pick from.
I know.
And for like what reason? Conversation?
People, yeah.
Or murder? Like
billions of people.
Bring them
pick
back
from.
Just to take them out. Like
right.
Right.
Oh yeah, like you could invite Hitler to dinner and then
and
just,
then just
kill
take
him
out
all over again,
just
if
for the pleasure
of doing
dead. It. What? Don't start that. Oh man, I have a friend Genevieve. Hi Genevieve. I don't know
that's
if she listens
really
to this.
That's a really pretty name.
Oh my gosh, and it matches her and her personality. She's just such a wonderful person. But she has like she is a teacher through and through. She has like must have like 50 some questions and phrases that she just like. Pulls out of her pocket randomly.
I love that. That's the kind of energy we
but
should bring
I
to the podcast.
Genuinely like love and appreciate that because there will be the tiniest lull and she'll be like, so tell me all about your morning. How are you feeling? Are you on like from like a scale of 1 to 10? How do you feel? How do you feel now compared to this morning? And then it's like they're just so incredibly, and that was a terrible example, but so incredibly detailed, like thoughtful questions. Mm-hmm. And then she just stares at you as you answer in like the best way. Oh my gosh.
It's like an interview rather than a conversation.
I always feel so pressured to give her a good answer. And I'm always just like, I'm fine. So no, I can't hold the conversation. Tell me a joke.
Okay. A police officer knocked on my door and told me my dogs were chasing people on bikes. I told him my dogs don't even own bikes.
That was good. That was the first thing I thought of, so I'm proud of myself. Like, the dogs can't ride bikes.
They can't.
Gosh, silly officer.
Idiot.
God, how embarrassing. You knocked on their door and everything. Man.
All right. Do you want to get into it? You got anything else off the dome you wanna talk about?
Pull some things out of my sleeves. I got nothing. I'm empty sleeved.
Okay, empty sleeves.
Continue
here.
To tell me about these lovely ladies.
June and Jennifer Gibbons?
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. So we left off last time. June and Jen were trying to join a local gang and got rejected, right? So then they formed their own gang.
Naturally.
They were doing some little bits of vandalism, you know, they would steal bicycles, things like that. You know, they tried to break a payphone and then they called the police to report their crime and then ran away.
That is so funny.
Right. So that's where we left off. If you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to last episode.
Do it.
Because this is a part two. Okay, so.
Part two.
Part two.
Ow!
Ow! I'm so sorry.
I don't know what's wrong. Anyway. We're just trying to liven up the studio. Coming at you.
pre-recorded.
On a Sunday afternoon.
Or maybe it's another day.
Yeah, could be. Okay, so things escalated quite quickly from this vandalism, and, you know, they were just having a little fun here, a little girls' day.
You know,
and then it got real bad, real quick. So shortly after this, very shortly after this, June wrote in her diary, "I'm planning on making petrol bombs. A bottle, petrol, and paper. Then hurl it through the window. I'm going to be the biggest arsonist around."
Wait, which one was the bossy one?
Jennifer.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of, and I have a lot more quotes from them in this one, because who better to tell their story than their own words, right?
Why not?
Yeah, June, I think, was the more subdued one. But for some reason, like, a lot more of the quotes come from her.
Mm.
But I think that's because she outlived Jennifer so long.
Spoiler alert.
It was the first thing I mentioned. Touché. Was her dying when she was like, "I'm going to make my heart stop."
Oh, that's right.
Right.
I'm just going to will it.
I'm going to will it to happen. God. Okay, so she writes, "I'm going to be the biggest arsonist around." Not something you should write down.
Inspiration.
Shortly later, in October of 1981, she wrote, "All this week, I've wanted to burn down the tractor store in Snowdrop Lane. I burned it down today, with the help of Jay, of course. It was the biggest night of my life. We climbed over a barbed wire fence, the sky grew blacker, and it started to rain. All the while, my lovely, glorious fire was licking its way through the roof, and the thick smoke filled the night sky. It was a picture which will live in my mind forever. Oh, what a sinful, evil, selfish mind. I know the Lord will forgive me. It's been a long, painful, hard year. Don't I deserve to express my distress?"
What a beautifully written crime.
Really, they had a way with words, I'll tell you what.
Gosh.
And so I believe that it is later, after those boys moved away.
Mm-hmm.
They were there earlier that summer.
Right.
Right.
So this is later in that same summer.
Yeah, this is October.
Man, that was a hard summer for her.
Yeah. Now, a little over a week later, the girls were caught trying to set a fire at Pembroke Technical College. So they were arrested, and their room at their parents' home was searched, where their diaries were found, along with their very incriminating entries, such as, "I'm going to be the biggest arsonist around." Right.
Oh, man.
The twins were consequently sent to Puckle Church Remand Center, where they were kept for 7 months while a more long-term solution for them was thought up.
Wow.
Like, they captured them and they were kind of like, what do we do with them now? It's kind of unprecedented.
Yeah.
So they were kept in a tiny little room with bunk beds, and as ever, they were isolated and grew to love and hate each other even more.
Oh my God, who got the top bunk, do you think?
I don't know.
Jennifer, of course. And June writes in her diary, I hate having the bottom bunk.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They began at this point to romanticize killing the other one.
Naturally.
There were such journal entries as, "One of us is plotting to kill one of us. A thud on the head on a cool evening. Dragging the lifeless body. Digging a secret grave.
It's the cool evening.
I'm in a dangerous situation. A scheming, insidious plot. How will it end? I'm in enslavement to her, this creature who lounges in this cell, who is with me every hour of my living soul."
They're just, you gotta love them. They're so dramatic.
So dramatic. And she wrote, "We have become fatal enemies in each other's eyes."
Oh, God.
But it's so bizarre because it's like, they fight. They literally fist fight with each other. And then if they're separated, though, they're immediately like, oh, my God, like, no, I was comatose. Wrong. I need her back.
Yeah.
Like, crying, screaming.
Dramatic.
You know. Yeah, it's just very...
Or at one point, they didn't, like, talk or eat, right? Until they were put back together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Weirdos. That's how I feel.
So in 1982, they were put under the care of a psychiatrist, William Spry, who was hired by the girl's defense attorney.
Mm.
So he meets with them twice, and they just refuse to talk to him. He then offers to talk to them over the phone instead. Like, he's basically like, okay, I'll go in this other room, It'll be separate from you guys, and we can talk through the phone if you're nervous to talk to me.
That's so weird. I don't know. What's the difference? Like,
but to them, there was a difference. Okay? Because, like, yeah. he begins to get some murmured responses from them.
Ooh, don't like that.
So then,
quit murmuring. Speak up.
So then one of them starts talking and answering him, likely June, because she typically was the one who wanted to speak more than Jennifer did.
Mm.
But when she starts talking and answering him, this leads to the girls having these horribly violent fights. Like, they're screaming at each other and literally trying to claw the other's eyes out. And they have to be, like, broken apart.
Good grief.
Yeah. So William Spry eventually diagnoses them with having a psychopathic personality disorder. And he wants the girls sent to Broadmoor, which is an infamous maximum security hospital in England for the criminally insane.
Mm.
It's, like, very famous. I don't know if it's still open. I should look into that. But it's been around for quite a while, I think.
You said Broadmoor?
Broadmoor, yeah.
Okay, it's kind of pretty, though.
It is.
I love it.
So listen, okay? It is pretty. And that's the thing here. So he says, like, he basically sells this to them as this gardenous landscape.
Picturesque.
Exactly. Like, they thought that it was a lovely, lovely place. Okay? Because apparently, like, at Broadmoor, they were publicly, like, trying to be, like, a sanctuary for, you know, the criminally insane, I guess.
All right. And then how was it on the inside?
Well, they actually tried for, like, a couple of years.
Oh, good for them.
And then it turned to bad.
Figured.
You know, like, they actually, like, didn't use any psychotic drugs for the first couple of years.
Wow.
And then everybody got drugged.
Drugs for everybody.
Drugs for everybody. Breakfast? Drugs. Lunch?
Drugs.
Dinner? More drugs.
Salmon with a side of drugs.
Dessert? You already know.
Drugs.
Okay, so.
This was not an advertisement.
For drugs?
Wait, is it still open?
Oh, I forgot to look that up. I feel like it's a famously haunted place. And so, therefore, I feel like it's closed. Because, like, that's how I've heard of it.
A history of the... Oh, there's a whole... Yep. A history of the criminally insane.
Yeah, it closed
insane.
In 2007.
Ugh.
That isn't that long ago.
Man, we could have gone in seventh grade. My dad would have taken me.
To London? To see it?
Oh, yeah, it is in London. Never mind.
Berkshire, England.
The Colorado... There's a Broadmoor Hotel in Colorado.
In Colorado.
Which is hilarious.
It's the same thing.
I think they should thrive off of the connection. Anyway.
Okay, so... He tries to sell them on Broadmoor. It's a maximum security hospital. And apparently no other psych hospitals would take arsonists at the time. Okay? So he was like, they either go here and get care or they go to prison.
Am I stupid? I didn't think arson was like... This is going to sound really stupid. I'm realizing it now, but I'm going to say it anyway, that arson wasn't that big of a deal.
I guess it is.
Well...
I don't know.
If that sounds stupid, don't judge
me. Maybe in terms of, like, insanity, it makes them, like, more insane.
Okay.
No idea.
Anyway, arson is a big deal.
We should get a psychologist on the show.
Forever. Tanner has a degree in psychology.
Does he?
Yeah.
You should ask him about it and then ask if he'll come be on the show.
Oh, he absolutely would.
Okay.
I'll let him know.
Okay.
I'll tell him to dust off his textbooks.
Okay. And he has to show up in, like, a lab coat and glasses.
Done.
He has to look the part. And he has to have a clipboard.
And, like, silly little glasses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they have to be silly.
Right.
A little.
Like the evil scientists. They're, like, the tiny little glasses. But you can't see their eyes. It's just the tiny little glasses. And you're like, what's wrong with them?
Right.
They're insane. They're a scientist. Psychologist.
He's mad.
Broadmoor.
Okay.
Picturesque.
So it's this guy's opinion that if they go to prison, that would be the worst thing for them. Because they are so young. They're teenagers still.
They're a little crazy, though.
So,
God, they're still teenagers?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I think they were 17. No.
19. But like on the latter end. Oh, okay.
They were 19 barely. At this. But when they, yeah, they were 19 during this. So I think when they did the acts of arson, they were 18. I don't know. I guess that's still very, like they were still, oh my God, what's the word? Like underage.
Yeah, in minors.
Yeah, they were still minors.
Is that the word you were thinking of, minors?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the word I was trying
minor.
To think of. Like, because here it's like 18, you're an adult, that's it. But I guess over there, 19, you're still a minor. I don't know what the age is there.
Oh.
But at least that's how they write about it.
Particularly back then. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay.
Who knows, man?
I don't even know.
So a lot of people disagreed with this. They felt that, you know, these girls were teenagers, and the youngest person at Broadmoor at this time was 27 years old. So they really felt that, like, that was a place for adults.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, there'd be a pretty big age gap, yeah.
Yeah, and then there is, like, this opinion that if these girls were white and middle class, things would have been handled a lot differently.
Hmm.
In general, they felt that if they were being sent to Broadmoor, it was just to kind of get rid of them.
Lovely.
So, the girls were tried on 16 counts of burglary, theft, and arson, and they pled not guilty. That's what their lawyers told them to do. And they were ordered to be sent to Broadmoor indefinitely.
Oh, man.
Indefinitely. And I think that was part of the issue that a lot of people had with it, was because they were being sent to a psych center. It was an indefinite hold.
That's a...
Versus
scary sentence, yeah. Let alone not having an end date.
Exactly. So June wrote at this time, spinning in circles, sick, mental, psychopathic. Imagine how I felt. Me, a mental psychopath, a dangerous, evil, ruthless criminal. Me, at last, my torment, my self-consciousness, my violence is known. I am labeled. Ah, now I know my fate. June Allison Gibbons, age just 19, going down in history as a psychopath.
Ah.
Ah.
Psychopath.
Ah.
I've been found out. What a weirdo. She's like reveling in it. She's like, they've caught me finally.
Mm-hmm.
Now people will know.
So one thing to mention here is that, again, June and Jennifer were misled as to what to expect at Broadmoor. It was described to them as this sort of scenic, idyllic institution. They were even told that there would be parties and discos there. And they were really actually excited to go there, thinking it would be a nice change of pace. They felt like their lives were finally starting, which is so
sad. I bet they did. Yeah.
This quickly was upended, though. Like, this wasn't a great place, obviously. The Yorkshire Ripper was doing time there at the time that they were there.
I was going to say that one of the top searches was, who was the serial killer at Broadmoor? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Man.
You know, like, it was just full of some pretty terrible people, you know. So both girls, once they got there, grew very depressed very quickly. June attempted suicide just weeks into her stay. Ugh. Jennifer attacked a nurse. They were both loaded up with antipsychotic drugs and kind of mostly forgotten by their family that never visited them.
Man.
They were often separated from each other. They could hardly read or write because of the drugs. They would go on, like, hunger strikes. June wrote, "We are forgotten, faded away, never to be seen again." June wrote, "Jay and I are two twins of history, colored girls. Life will go on outside, passing away. Where are we now?" they will say.
Mm. Wow. That was really emotional. They're just such good writers. It sounds really sarcastic. Genuinely really beautiful.
It is really sad. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you can feel the emotion that they're putting into their words.
Yeah. I mean, for all of like the poor choices they make.
That's one way to say it.
They are very self-aware.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just strange in general, you know, because it's like if you know, you assume that they're, like, insane or whatever.
But they're so aware.
They don't come off that way when they write.
No.
So 12 years they were there. this went on.
Wow.
And the girls sort of couldn't understand why they weren't being released when their case would be revisited every couple of years that they were there. So it was like every few years they would come up and they would be like, they're not ready to be released yet. And they're like, okay, what the like, heck? Why?
What else right? is there? Yeah.
Yeah. And there is this feeling that juvenile delinquents, that's the word, those are the words I was looking for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Delinquents.
Juvenile delinquents with the same crimes that they committed would have gotten 2 years in prison.
And they've been there for 12 years.
Yeah. Of what they considered hell. And they even began talking, trying to plead their case with, like, whoever would listen. They would talk. They said, you know, you wanted us to talk, and now we're talking. They even wrote a multitude of letters, including writing to the queen asking to be pardoned. Wow. They did, like, whatever they could do to get out of this place. And Jennifer seemed to have a harder time in the hospital. June said that Jennifer seemed to become kind of, like, schizophrenic in there. Like, she started hearing gunshots outside her window and quoting the Bible to her.
Weird.
Really, like, not great behavior to see from her. And after a handful of years, they tried to put the girls together again to see if that would be better because they were just so depressed apart. But they just kept violently fighting with each other and then making up again.
Oh my gosh.
And June said at that time, even though we were fighting, we loved each other. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, they just want to constantly be together, but also they can't stand each other.
I have students like that, and I'm like, you either need to learn to be friends, like real friends, or just don't talk to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the same cycle.
Yep.
Gosh.
You should have told them that back then.
I'm just going to, like, low-key.
Go back in time.
Oh, I was like, I'm just going to low-key tell them about the twins. And just look these up. No, yeah. No.
So around the end of their years in Broadmoor, a journalist by the name of Marjorie Wallace heard of the girl's story and decided to look into it. So she got in contact with the girl's doctors and parents, and the parents even handed over to Marjorie the girl's diaries and writing, which was still in the black garbage bags that the police had collected them in.
Okay.
So it's like, that's...
Y'all aren't even looking at it,
are
you?
That's how the parents were.
Jeez.
You know. Marjorie recognized the incredible writing of the girls, and through their journals, she didn't see them as psychotic so much as troubled.
All right.
And she became one of their biggest advocates.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, psychotic in the terms of, like, you know, it being a health issue.
Okay.
Versus, like, trauma and... Mm. You know.
Well, they're clearly traumatized.
Yeah, that's for sure. So Marjorie really circulated their work and their cause in the media and journalistic circles. And they became sort of like symbol, especially in like the poetry world, for like the voice of like colored girls who had like this horrible upbringing and, I don't know, still found beauty to write about, I guess.
I don't know if that's a super... universal thought that they don't have super universal thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that their poetry, like, they didn't just write entries like
okay,
this.
We're
like
focusing on the insane part. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, I mean, they even, like, between the two of them, they wrote 5 or 6 novels.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Over
you
their
did
lives.
Say that. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, they had a lot of writing that was not about them.
All right, is any of their stuff on your TBR list?
It's not.
It should be.
I think one of them was, there was one novel, I think, that June wrote, I want to say, that was traditionally published. I'm not sure. Yes. Yeah, so June and Jennifer Gibbons, with the help of Marjorie, they were almost 30 years old when they were finally released from Broadmoor.
Wow.
And it was on that morning, on the bus out of their hell, that Jennifer rested her head on June's shoulder and said, "At long last, we're out," and then seemingly willed her heart to stop beating so that her sister could live. Jennifer was buried in a plot near their parents' home with a gravestone inscripted with one of June's poems. "We once were two, we two made one, we know more too. Through life, be one. Rest in peace. It's like Dr. Seuss.
It is. I didn't want to read it one more time.
We once were two. We two made one. We know more too.
That's the line that kills me.
Through life, be one.
We know more too. Mm-hmm. That's the line that took me out.
We know more too.
We know more too. That's so sad. I can't. Yes, yeah.
It is. Ugh. So June did one more year at a different psych hospital, but then she was finally released.
Jeez.
She continued to take medication every day and ultimately went on to live a normal life. Years of antipsychotic drugs did render it more difficult for her to speak for the remainder of her life. And a touch of nervousness and a slight speech impediment were the only hint of June's previous life with Jennifer.
Wow.
She began to call herself Allison, which was her middle name.
Okay.
And she said that she preferred it because she'd had too much bad luck under the name June.
Yeah, that's fair.
In an interview in those first years of normalcy when she resided at a halfway house, she said that she dreamed of marriage and children but knew that it may be too late for her. She said, too, it seems to me that as I get older, I don't want to write anymore, she says. I don't see the point in writing books now. I can communicate by talking now, can't I? I stopped writing diaries way back. I'm a bit lazy now, brain dead. I can't be bothered to write books. She said, I could sleep for 10 days if I wanted to. And I see my sister in my dreams, talking to me. And when she thinks back on her time at Broadmoor, she says, you know what we were known as in there? The Queens of Broadmoor. Aww. June is still alive today and does many interviews and will talk to anyone really that will listen. The story of the Silent Twins has fascinated many over the years and has even led to movies and various books about their story.
Oh my God, that's we've got to try to Jennifer talk to Gibbons. Her.
Yeah, she's actually been on quite a few podcasts.
I don't think I'd be able to control myself. Oh man. Yeah, they're so interesting. It's wild. Yeah. It's almost like they made a deal with the devil and like they got out if Jennifer. I was very well articulated. I should write poetry. Oh man.
Yep. It is. It's interesting, you know? Because it's like as soon as one of them was gone, it was like the other one was totally normal.
Well, like, yeah, they said in their writing, too, that they were just, like, holding each other mm-hmm. back.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Yep. I don't know.
That's wild. Yep. Yeah, I gotta listen to some of her interviews.
Yeah. Yeah. I should do that, too.
I remember the other thing.
I just read stuff, you know?
Yeah, you know. I remember the other thing that transpired between these episodes.
What?
I turned 30.
You did.
That
you
too. Did turn 30. I was like, there's something else. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about their age. And she's like, God, as I get older, I'm like, same. As I get older, man, I'm lazy.
Imagine the last decade of your life.
Well, they didn't get to experience their 20s. Yeah. Ugh. Sad.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
They actually had boyfriends when they were in Broadmoor.
I bet they did.
They did some dating.
They were the queens of Broadmoor.
They were. They would go to the discos there.
Ish. Were there discos there?
I don't think so. Don't think so.
No. That's awful.
Yeah.
Man, that sucks that they were excited to go there.
It does. Like, why lie to them about it, you know?
Well, it like almost like phrased it like they had a choice, and it's like, but they didn't have a choice. You're going to mm-hmm. send them anyway, so why get their hopes up?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder how different their lives would have been if maybe they had just gone to prison for 2 years. You know, it's like, would it have been better or worse?
They probably would have started a gang.
Yeah.
And it would have just been them two.
It just would have been them two.
In prison.
Mm-hmm.
We two now.
Our gang. Okay, that's my story. What you got for me?
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Well, not twins.
Triplets?
Keep going. No. That'd be wild. Quadtuplets. I don't know what the word is.
Sextuplets?
Yep.
Okay.
Octuplets.
Noctuplets?
I don't know. All I can think of is the Spanish word for 10. Anyway, all right. That's fine.
I'm going to tell you a story now.
Okay.
That was a horrible introduction.
I can't wait.
All right. It's not funny.
Okay.
As my stories ever are. So, I'm going to tell you the story of Sierra Breland. Breland. Yes. So, Sierra Breland was 31 years old and a new mother to her five-month-old son when she went missing on February 24th of 2022. 2 years ago. She was originally from Georgia, where her parents and extended family still live. Inspired by her mother's work as a paralegal, Sierra went to the University of Tennessee for college, and then she attended Florida State University to become a lawyer. Her goal in life was to create a life for herself in Atlanta. She loved Atlanta. That was always her goal. Her mother describes her as energetic and full of life, stating that she was incredibly driven in her career, and it meant a great deal to her. In October of 2020, Sierra met Xavier Breland on Tinder, and their relationship moved very, very quickly.
I hate him already.
Right. And they got married only after dating for 6 months.
Oh.
And then when they did get married at 6 months, Sierra was also pregnant.
How old were they? Did you say that?
She's 31.
31. Okay. Yeah.
I think he's slightly older.
Okay.
But, like, not, like, crazy older.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't remember. He doesn't matter. So, she met Xavier Breland on Tinder. They get married. She's pregnant. At some point, kind of awkwardly, in my personal opinion, Sierra also provided Xavier legal assistance. He was in a pretty big legal dispute with his ex-wife, with whom he had a daughter. So, there was a pretty ugly, like, custody battle going on there.
Mm.
And she helped him out. Like, legally, which I just think is kind of...
Like, in what terms?
They gave him advice.
Is she like a lawyer? What to do.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you miss that?
Yeah, I missed that.
Her mom was a paralegal, so she went and became a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
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 Anyway, I mentioned it.
I love that.
They heard it.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway. I think... Anyway. Doesn't matter. At some point, Sierra and Xavier chose to leave the state of Georgia and relocate to Indiana... in hopes of starting a new life there together. I'm sure Georgia got pretty small with the whole ex-wife situation. Mm. Here, Sierra got a job at a law firm, and by the end of 2021, gave birth to their son, Jackson, with such a fun spelling, J-A-X-S-O-N.
Hmm.
Cute. While the couple appeared perfectly happy on the outside, on the inside, it was quite a different tale. Sierra's cousin, Shelby Campbell, who I'll be quoting a lot, shared that the issues between Sierra and Xavier actually started very shortly after they met. After the first few dates, there was even this whole ordeal. Sierra told Xavier to leave her alone and that she wanted no more contact with him, which that's a pretty, like, big blow up. But of course, Xavier, not the type to take no for an answer, he showed up to her apartment uninvited, unwelcome, and just sat and waited by her door. And then sitting here, he would send her threatening messages if she didn't talk to him. Regrettably, Sierra did give him another chance. Not quite sure why. That's so unfortunate. Flash forward 6 months, and the two were married. However, the issues did not stop, and of course, as these things go, only got worse. Shelby shared that she and Sierra were the best of friends, and they would talk or text every single day. She said that Sierra even shared her marital issues with Shelby, the most concerning of which was that she was afraid of her husband. And this is a text from Sierra to Shelby. And this is the quote. "Well, I'm struggling with it in a very big way. I don't want to give up on someone I love and just abandon him and our family. But at the same time, I feel like behavior gets progressively worse and not better. So to me, if this is how it is now, then how is it going to be in the future? Plus, he used to feel bad when he said ugly stuff, and lately, he isn't even sorry for his behavior. It's like he blames me for it and is basically like, I did this because you made me." Which we can just, you
classic
can
abuser.
See the manipulation.
Yeah.
Sierra even shared with Shelby that if something ever happened to her, Xavier was responsible.
Oh, God.
Yep. She even, and I'll say it later again as well, she even told her parents the same thing, which is so concerning.
And why? Okay.
I know. It's hard to.
No, I know.
Hindsight, you know.
None of it is any of their faults except his.
Right. she told Shelby that if anything ever happened to her, that Xavier would be responsible. She even warned Shelby that if she texted her, like they had this like deal. She said, if I text you or I call you and I use the word emergency, that Shelby should call the cops immediately and give them Sierra's home address. Which is just like, if you have to put something in place. Can you
even imagine? Like,
it's like.
And then they have a baby.
I know. I know, outside looking in, it's so, like, clear, but I can't imagine how hard it was for her in that moment. And she mentions it as well, you know, she has a job there, she has a life there, they have a child together. Like, there's mm-hmm. so many pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Shelby urged Sierra many, many times to leave him. And things progressively got even more worse over time. The police would regularly receive calls from their home in Indiana, and they would show up for these domestic issues. This not only happened in Indiana, it also happened back when they lived in Georgia as well. The police were just regularly, like, they became pretty well known to the police departments in the area.
Wow.
Unfortunately, each time they arrived, however, Sierra had been calmed down enough by Xavier and would even start to, like, lie on his behalf. Like, totally, like, she was completely being manipulated.
Yeah.
After one of these calls, which loved this investigator, an investigator actually reached out to Sierra's mother, letting her know what was going on in the house and the pattern that was developing. Mm-hmm. He expressed pretty, like, large concern, sharing that he had seen this pattern many, many times and that it rarely ends well.
Mm-hmm.
So he urged Sierra's mother to get as involved as possible and encourage her daughter to leave him, to do what she needed to do to get out. So sadly, Sierra was planning to leave him, but of course she had to do so strategically. This, clearly he was not the man to just walk away from. She had even successfully created a secret bank account where she regularly deposited and hid money from her husband. And though she did love him, it came to the point that looking at him, she could really see what he was and what her life had become.
Mm-hmm.
And in a message to Shelby, she says this: I just feel like I can't allow myself to be stupid and stay in a bad situation when I know it's not going to improve. Like I told him, you can say that this isn't you and you're not a bad guy, blah, blah, but this is the only you I know and I'm scared. We're moving across the entire country and I'm sacrificing everything for you and you're going to treat me like shit. And I do honestly believe you will continue to treat me however you want. And then I have no one to blame but myself for allowing myself to be in the situation and to go into it eyes wide open. So it just sucks because she was yeah. so aware.
Yeah.
Her parents, Kelly and Nick Locklear, did everything they could to support her while states away. They were aware that their marriage wasn't going well, and they wanted her to break up with Xavier. They regularly told Sierra that she always had the option to come home, meaning mm-hmm. to head back to Georgia. Sierra's opportunity finally arrived when she, Xavier, their baby, and their golden doodle... Sorry. All loaded up in her 2017 white Volkswagen Tiguan. And
that's what I have.
I know.
I mean, no, I don't.
I mean.
Mine's red, so.
It's like a fire engine red. Anyway, they loaded up the car and they headed down to Georgia to visit family. So they kind of like split when they first got there. So Sierra went to her parents' house and then Xavier's mother also lived down there. So he, like, went and visited them as well with her son, Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So Sierra made it to her parents' house in Cleveland, Georgia on Saturday, February 19th. Though on the outside, it appeared to be a regular family trip, which they apparently did very often. She made them aware that she had no intention of returning with Xavier to Indiana.
Mm.
She said this was it. She said, she talked about getting a divorce and getting a job down in Georgia. You know, leaving him behind and not going back to Indiana. That mm-hmm. she said, I think she said at one point that her furniture can rot. She's leaving. Like, good she did not her. Care to come back.
Yeah.
But of course, Xavier did not know any of this.
Right.
So Sierra stayed at her parents' house Saturday, which is the day she arrived, stayed at her parents' house Saturday night. And then on Sunday, February 20th, she left her parents' home to go pick up her son, Jackson, and bring him back home to her parents. And this was kind of it. Like, it was soon time for them to go back home. This was kind of it. So she went to go get her son. He was with Xavier, who was at his mother's house, which was about an hour away in Johns Creek, Georgia. When she arrived here, Shelby would receive one of the last texts from Sierra, saying, "I'm at Xavier's mom's house. He won't give me Jackson, so I'm waiting to get him so I can leave." On Monday the next day, Sierra sent her father a text at 11:17 p.m., letting him know that she would be spending the night and would be back the next morning, Tuesday, February 22nd. Tuesday dragged on, and her father reached out to her, as he hadn't heard anything from her. Sierra responds, saying that everything was okay, she just wasn't feeling well. Wednesday rolls around, and he texts...
actually her?
That, right. Wednesday rolls around, and he texts his daughter again, but receives no response. Thursday comes now. He texts her, no answer. By Friday, her parents are beyond worried. They hadn't heard from their daughter in 3 days, and it was very uncommon for her to leave their messages unanswered, especially in this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. On the evening of Saturday, February 26th of that same week, so this is spanned over a week now, Nick, Sierra's dad, gets a call from an Indiana number that he did not recognize. He didn't think too much of it. He didn't get, like, super worried because he was like, oh, our daughter's down here in Georgia, just an hour away. Like, weird, but I'll answer it. So he answers it. It was the Indiana police, informing him that his daughter, Sierra, had been reported missing by her husband, Xavier, who had returned home already. Shelby had this to say. What's completely baffling is that he didn't call anyone to check on her. He didn't reach out to anyone. He didn't make us aware at all. He didn't call them to see if she was there with them. Didn't let them know that he couldn't find her, whatever. After speaking to the police, Nick then calls his daughter, but it was Xavier who answered. Nick leveled with Xavier and asked him to just tell him the truth as to what happened to his daughter. He added that Sierra had made it abundantly clear that if anything happened to her, that Xavier was responsible. Xavier tells Nick to go to hell and hung up on him. In a March 2nd press release, the Carmel police, oh, they're from Carmel, Indiana, or they live in Carmel, Indiana. Super fun. I don't know why I didn't say that earlier. The Carmel police shared that Xavier Breland had reported his wife missing on Saturday, February 26th, so that same Saturday. Mm-hmm. During the missing persons investigation, police uncovered surveillance footage from Xavier's mom's house. The last image of Sierra is on February 24th at 7:17 p.m. though nothing concerning occurs in the video. According to Xavier, after arriving back home to Carmel, Indiana, without telling her family, without reaching out to anyone, they arrive back home to Indiana, to their house in Indiana. Sierra leaves their home around 10 p.m. to walk to a nearby store. She was wearing a black t-shirt and purple shorts in 20-degree weather. That also doesn't make sense. That's what he said she was wearing, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
Though police were able to definitively determine that Sierra never made it to the store. Sierra had left behind her personal cell phone, her work phone, a burner phone, along with her ID and credit cards, and most concerning of all, without her 5-month-old son.
Hmm. Why'd she have a burner phone?
Her family had shared that she had the burner phone to call or text them whenever she needed to. So I'm assuming Xavier probably watched her cell phone.
Her other one, yeah.
Her family adamantly stated that she would have never run away without telling them, mm-hmm. and certainly not without Jackson.
Right.
Her parents said that they knew, and this is so sad, her parents said that they knew the moment the police called to tell them she was missing that she was dead. The parents shared that she wouldn't even take a shower without somebody watching Jackson, somebody she trusted watching Jackson, and there were very few people she trusted to watch him. They went on to say that she would wake up several times throughout the night just to check in on him when he had something as, like, minor as a rash. There's no possible way that she would have left without her son. Mm-hmm. Kelly described her daughter as a loving mom who lived to care for her son. Police said that there were actually no clear indicators that Sierra ever made it back to Indiana at all. Now, this is just such a strange event. The timeline gets a little weird from here, and I did my best to piece it together, but it was a little confusing. But this weird, strange event happened. So a few days later, 2 days later, after he reports his wife missing, February 28th, Xavier says that he was moving a Christmas tree in his garage. And this is the way it's worded, which makes no sense to me. He was moving a Christmas tree in his garage when he hears a gunshot and runs outside to investigate. Some things said that he ran away, like got scared and ran a little bit, but then like, anyway, so he runs outside. He then turns around, goes back into his garage, located the gun and unloaded it.
What?
And that was said in every article that I read. So, but it wasn't clear that he fired it or who fired it.
Right.
Or he's like, ooh, somebody's going to, maybe he was like, ooh, somebody's going to come looking. I better make sure my firearm is unloaded. I don't know. And I'll say that again. So he was moving a Christmas tree in his garage when he hears a gunshot and ran outside. He then re-entered the garage, located the gun, and unloaded it before calling police and reporting the incident himself. So that's also weird. He calls himself.
Yeah.
Police arrived at his door in response to the call, and two different guns were actually located in the house. So this kind of, like, triggered a whole, like, deep dive into Xavier and who he was as a person, and it brought up quite a few problems from his past. In 2005, Xavier had faced felony-level burglary charges and even had a warrant out for his arrest for aggravated stalking back in Georgia.
That checks out.
He was arrested per the warrant and extradited back to Georgia to stand trial. Also, if you're a felon, you can't own firearms.
Right.
According to court records, Xavier had placed a tracking device inside a teddy bear that he had given to his daughter with the intention of unknowingly tracking the movements of his ex-wife, who at the time had a restraining order on him. The two had priorly gone through a rough custody battle, the one I said that I believe Sierra had assisted him with, but I could be wrong on that. But unfortunately, which I don't understand why, in August of 2022, Xavier was found not guilty for aggravated stalking, I didn't even realize was a thing. No, this was the aggravated...
Guilty on the felony, but then the
aggravated... Oh, he already had a felony the burglary.
Okay.
So he had a felony from 2005 from a burglary. The stalking was an active arrest warrant.
Okay.
So he, like, fled Georgia, clearly.
Oh, okay, okay.
Which is probably why they moved to Indiana in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, which is, like, so weird in itself because, like, Sierra loved Georgia. And wanted to, like, live in Atlanta and, like, be in the city. Yeah. So very, very strange that they would move to somewhere called Carmel, Indiana. No offense, Indiana. I don't know what Carmel. I'm sure it's wonderful. So he stood trial for the aggravated. So they arrested him on the scene because he was a felon that has firearms. But the first thing that came up was I guess, priority wise. So in this case, he had an active arrest warrant out from Georgia. So they, like, put on pause the gun thing and they extradited him to Georgia to go stand trial for the aggravated stalking, which I didn't even realize aggravated stalking was a thing, and that freaks me out. Mm-hmm. So he stood trial for the aggravating stalking incident where he was ridiculously found not guilty. Then he would be extradited again back to Indiana. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, of course, this extradition had nothing to do with Sierra's case, but the police continued their investigation to locate as much evidence as possible. It's worth noting, too, though, that Xavier was the one and only person of interest in this case. Meanwhile, in Johns Creek, which is where Xavier's mother's home is in Georgia, several search parties went out in an effort to locate her or her body. Digital ads, flyers, and every possible means of communication. They even had digital, like, billboards that they put her face on as well. I mean, they put her face everywhere they could think to put it, begging people for information. Mm-hmm. The police even tracked Xavier's route from Georgia all the way back to Indiana through, you know, they traveled through two other states in that process. Mm-hmm. And they, again, once again, said that they were entirely unable to confirm whether or not Sierra was in the car at all on this trip home. In any kind of surveillance footage or images they captured, Xavier was always the only one ever seen getting in and out of the car at gas stations or stores that he stopped at. Police did receive a warrant to heavily search Xavier's mother's home, as this was the last place that she was actually seen.
Mm-hmm.
They ripped open the mat, like they sliced open the mattresses, mm-hmm. all the, like everything, they ripped up the carpet, like everything they could possibly think of, they searched in her home. And at the time, this was a super, I mean, it still is a super active case, or still like, what is it called? Oh my God, I'm blanking. It's not a live case.
Like they haven't solved it?
Right. It's still an open case, right. So they couldn't share a whole lot. That's what I was trying to say. So they couldn't share a whole lot if they found anything with the public at the time. So continuing on in their search, in March of 2022, the police obtained a jailhouse video of Xavier talking to his children, because his children came to visit him, right. And their recorded interactions, of course. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a noteworthy, like strange interaction with his children. And I'm assuming that would be his son with Sierra and then his daughter mm-hmm. from his previous marriage, which why the daughter's there, I don't understand, but whatever.
Well, then it's like he's doing all these weird things. Like he knows he's a felon and he can't have a gun, and then he's going to call the cops.
Right.
So, okay, he has a strange,
it's very strange
conversation here.
So he has a strange conversation. In the video, he can be heard and seen telling his children that Sierra had been kidnapped, which is an entirely different story than what he shared with the police.
Right.
And he might have been, like, I don't know, trying to make it make sense for them. I don't know. I don't
it's
wanna,
a horrible
I
thing to tell
I don't
want to
give him the benefit of the yeah. doubt. And even so, it's not, like, comforting, because he continues on saying, and this is a quote, "Someone kidnapped my wife. You know what it means when you kidnap an adult? She's not coming home, bud."
What the fuck?
Like, who talks to their children like that? Okay, oh granted, God. He's like 5 months old, but still, like, wait.
5 months?
I don't know. That's his son, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, oh no, he'd be...
Did he have a son, too, with his...
No, it was just it was a daughter. Just kidding. The baby would be older at this point. Never mind. Ignore me. Okay. But, like, very weird. And talking to your children, too. Like, weird that you'd say someone... Because he was calling her Sierra. And then he, like, switched and was like, "Someone kidnapped my wife." My wife.
Right.
What's that from? Anyway, it's a reference.
No, I know.
Oh, John Mulaney.
Is it?
My wife.
I just know Tanner says that.
Because of that stand-up. Anyway, okay. He does. Oh, God. Anyway. So, Xavier had... Anyway, that was just, like, what was going on in the midst of things. So, Xavier had been extradited back to Indiana, not for Sierra's case, but for the gun charges.
Mm-hmm.
So, as he was categorized a serious and violent felon, which is, like, my favorite description ever of him, it was obviously very illegal for him to be in possession of any firearms. So the whole Christmas tree mm-hmm. story. They actually, when they searched his home, they actually found 2 firearms. So not even just like one offense, like mm-hmm. multiple. And I hate this. He pleaded with the judge, attempting to garner sympathy, I guess. He begged the judge to set the bond at a limit that his mother could afford. And he said that he just needs a chance to rework his life.
Oh my God. Cry me a fucking river, guy.
I feel like you're done. I feel yeah, like you're done.
Right?
I feel like you've had your time. You're done. My mom's going to yell at me because she's being like, he could hear this. I'm like, okay, I hope he does. So it must have worked. He was able to post bail in February of 2023 with his case originally being set for December 28th of 2023. However, Xavier never showed up.
What?
He...
I thought he was in jail.
Had... No, he said he posted bail.
Oh, okay. Right.
You are tired today. Jeez.
I'm sorry.
She was a lawyer? No. So he posted bail.
Okay.
He's out. February of 23. He's out.
Okay.
And that December, which I hate how long they take, but in December, he was set to go to like the court case, mm-hmm. whatever. But he never showed up.
I cannot believe that they would like grant him bail. Right? After he evaded arrest before.
Well, this time, he not only did not show up to his court case, he disappeared. He went missing himself.
So he really could hear
He was on the run. He was on the lam.
Okay.
As they might say. bad man. I don't know. And so it was super frustrating because he never showed up. He disappeared. And with his disappearance, their only person of interest. Because Sierra's case is still open. They still want to know what happened to her and what's going on. So throughout this whole ordeal, Xavier had continued to claim that Sierra left of her own volition, despite repeated, from what I read, intense interrogation, which love that. And Kelly describes her daughter's investigation as collecting pieces of a puzzle without knowing the full picture, which is just so sad. Mm-hmm. So he disappeared in December of 23. In January of 2024, which is freaky because this year, a month after his hearing, after a weeks-long manhunt, Xavier Breland was finally found and located in Georgia.
Bring him in, boys.
Bring him in. They had put out a re-arrest warrant for him, so he was, of course, taken into custody. The last bit, and this is so frustrating, and if anybody knows or sees anything, please send it to me. The last bit of information that I could find is that his hearing has been continually postponed for different reasons. And the last date that I could see is that it was set for April 15th of this year, but I have not been able to find what the answer was.
What happened?
I even went on one of those sketchy, like, search people up sites, and then I got freaked out, so I exited out. I can't find anything. I can't find what the decision was or anything like that. I feel like maybe it got postponed again. But as for Sierra, police and investigators have yet to locate her or discover the whereabouts of her disappearance. The FBI has gotten involved by this point, and they are offering a $10,000 reward for information regarding Sierra's disappearance. The family and the police and the investigators and the locals and everybody is still begging people, if they have seen anything, if you saw a white Tiguan around that time, to call and just share whatever you've seen. And they still have. Sadly, last year, Sierra's mother passed away.
That's really sad.
So sad.
So is their child with...
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes. So I meant to put that in and I forgot to put that in.
I mean, it goes, like, I assumed.
So when he first went in, when they first arrested, he was extradited, whatever, the first time, the son was actually taken and put into foster care for the time, or state care for the time being.
The son was?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Because the daughter is from the previous marriage.
Yes. Right? Just the son. Yes. So Sierra's parents worked really, really hard, and they were able to receive full custody of him and get him out of foster care and bring him home to Georgia, which was really sweet. And so, I mean, I guess now he's just living with his grandfather. That's just this. I just hate, hate
terrible.
That they don't know.
Yeah.
And then, what a terrible feeling to, see all the signs leading up to it and thinking, she was so close to getting out.
Yeah. Truly.
And then Nick, her dad, to say the moment they called, he knew that she was already dead. Which is so, and they've said that several times in interviews. They just knew immediately, which is so sad. Anyway, Xavier's a garbage piece of human.
That's horrible.
And whatever happened to him, I hope it's terrible. Sorry, Mom. I just hate that's so not fair. Not to sound like a small child, but it's not fair that they don't get an answer.
Right.
And then her mom has passed away and still has no answer.
It's he can't even give her family peace by telling them what
you've
happened.
Done so many shitty things. Just have the decency to tell them the truth. So I hope they peg as much as they possibly can on him. And he's evading the court case for the stupid guns, even. There's still been no charges put against him for Sierra's case, which is so frustrating. Because I get so mad at Law and Order. Because they know, but they don't have enough to make it stick. And that makes me so mad.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's like that and innocent people are still put away for stuff that they didn't do, you know? So it's it's a hard line.
It's so wild. The whole thing, the whole criminal system is wild to me.
Yeah, it really
is. Well, these shows and people admit their guilt, in the wrong type of scenario, so it gets thrown out. And they can't use their admission of literal guilt to argue the case, which is whack to me. I don't know. I couldn't decide between wild or whack. Whack to me.
It's whack.
It's whack.
Yep.
Anyway, that's Sierra. I hope she's found some kind of peace.
I know.
I hope her son has a nice and easy life.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly very loved. And Xavier, I hope you stub your toe every time you walk past something.
Oh, that's sad.
It's also, she's so close to our age. It just sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, we're old.
I know.
I'm also like, man, I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer. Anyway, that's all I got.
I would be a horrible lawyer. I would, like, cry when I would argue with people.
Or somebody gets a little, like, mouthy with me and I'd just start crying.
Yeah.
Like, don't you?
Exactly.
It'd be really bad. Yeah. I'd be really bad. If you ever see me walk in and I'm like, I will defend you, just be like, no thanks. You'd be better off defending yourself.
Oh, man.
Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for listening. Sorry, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's worth the wait, hopefully. It
is. Follow us everywhere except in person. You can email us at icecreamsocialpod@gmail.com.
Please email us, especially if you have information on this case.
Mm-hmm. You can find us anywhere on social media at Ice Cream Social Podcast. I think that's it.
We still have merch linked in our bio. Mm-hmm. Go get some. The quality's real nice.
It is.
Real nice.
We can vouch for that because we have all of it.
I think we've bought most of our own merchandise.
Yes.
Yep. It's pretty great. It's 1,000% worth it.
It is.
Anyway.
Anyway, thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.